Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And on today's episode 169, we are reviewing the new movie The Wonder, which is on Netflix, starring Florence Pugh, Miss Flo, in this one. And this is based on a book by the same author that did the book Room. Mm-hmm. And obviously that was made into a movie with Brie Larson. Mm-hmm. Jacob Tremblay did very well at the Oscars. So this is another book by that same author. So we'll talk about The Wonder today. This is an interesting movie.
Because
it's kind of an interesting story, and I don't really know, much. I don't know if there's a lot there, honestly, in terms of the story for this one. So I know you read the book, but you said it had been a while since you read the book. So
yeah, and I even had to look after the ending. I even had to look a couple things up to be like, I don't remember if that's what I read or why this. Like, I couldn't remember what inspired this book and all that. So I looked that stuff up. Yes.
So we'll get into that coming up in just a few minutes. But first, we have some news items. First thing is that we found out from Variety earlier this week that the Academy Awards are going to present all 23 categories live on the broadcast when that happens next year for the Oscars. Now, they've gotten some flack for not presenting certain categories on screen. So I think this is why they've made the decision to present all the categories. My only concern with this is this could make the Oscars like 5 hours long if they don't do some things to really like make this flow well.
Yeah, I can't say I'm excited about that choice. I also learned today, just because we're talking about this and I heard it today, that they're already talking about Will Smith. They, like, the post or whatever was like, slap or no slap, Will Smith's getting Oscar buzz. And I was like, oh, great, let's keep rewarding people for bad behavior. But the Oscars, like, doing all these categories live, I agree with you, Jared. I'm very worried about how long it's going to be. I think it's great to recognize those categories that we never hear about, but I feel like that could be pre-recorded and shared during the thing, or they could
also
shorten. We really don't need all the crap in the middle. We don't need all the, like, sketches and host talking.
Cut that out, and then I don't want to, like, say that some awards are boring, but some of them are.
If you're the
people making this show, you cannot put all of those right next to each other. Like, you can't have best documentary, best foreign or international feature, best animated short documentary, or best sound mixing. You can't put all the technical things right next to each other. You need to throw in something that's going to have some stars get up there every so often. So, like, do three or four of those, then do best adapted screenplay, then do three or four of those, and do best supporting actress. You know, like, I feel like they always start the broadcast with, like, best supporting actress, best supporting actor, and then we go 2 hours with all these other awards, and then we get to the big ones at the end of the night, you know, but they cram them all together right at the end of the broadcast. So
right.
I feel like if they just spaced those out better, it would work better. So,
and then I think we'd announced on our last episode that Jimmy Kimmel is hosting.
Yes, he is back.
And then
to host
it looks to me
again.
Like it's occurring on March 12th. It's a Sunday. I will say I've become a fan of doing it later in the year, like in March. I kind of like the March timeline rather than January or February.
Yeah, it gives you more time to see the movies too, which is nice. So it gives you a few.
But
more
I
weeks.
Do. The only downside is I get how that's confusing to people, because it's even confusing to you and I sometimes about, like, wait, what movie's eligible? Or what? I thought that movie came out 8 years ago, but really it was like, no, it was just 10 months ago, but feels like 12 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So also Pete Davidson in another relationship with Emily Ratajkowski. Yeah. So they're together. I don't get what the appeal is for these women dating Pete Davidson.
I think I know exactly what the appeal is, but I can't say it on the recording. But I think it is physical in nature.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I think he possesses the physical trait that people are looking for. This should be the soundbite for the episode. As I'm saying it, I'm like, this is it. But
it's
anyway.
Definitely the soundbite, yeah.
But also, okay, so another thing that happened, Jared, I know, like, I just think heard a lot of news bites and stuff the last few days, but Emily Ratajkowski was talking about going through her divorce and losing weight the other day. And for a lot of people who have struggled with eating disorders, I feel like that maybe wasn't the most constructive thing she could have said in an interview, because she said she got down to 100 pounds. And I was like, okay, so you went from like 105 to 100, because she's so thin.
Yeah.
And I also thought you're a supermodel and so hot. Like, we can tell you're hot. We all see it. We know what you look like. I don't know that that was a useful... I feel bad that she's gone through a divorce. I also think her ex-husband's an idiot for cheating on her. But I don't know that, like, talking about getting down to 100 pounds is the best thing to share with the world, with your platform, with a lot of people having... like that being very triggering.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree for that for sure. Yeah. So, also we learned news. I think this was from maybe the Hollywood Reporter, that the Avatar 2 budget is like $400 million. So this movie has to like make $1 billion basically just to break even with all the marketing and, you know, how much Disney has promoted this. I mean, they've promoted this more than Black Panther Wakanda Forever, so every single movie I go to, I get the Avatar trailer.
Same. And I get angry every time. You'd think my reaction would change, but no.
So that'll be out in a few weeks. We're probably going to review it here on the show because it's going to be a huge movie, but I would say neither one of us is super pumped for it. Now, it could blow us away, it could be fantastic, but
I don't know if I'm gonna sit through it. I just don't know. I have not decided.
It's also like 3 hours, so that's kind of annoying too. So, okay, on to some recommendations today. I only have one recommend. It is a book. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm enjoying it so far. It's called Madhouse at the End of the Earth. It's by Julian Sancton, and it is about this journey that the ship took back in the 1800s with this crew to Antarctica. Basically, ooh, nobody had discovered Antarctica at that, and still today, we don't know like a ton about Antarctica. There's not a ton of people hanging out there or anything. So it just kind of chronicles that whole journey. It was this crew that left from Belgium basically to go down to Antarctica. But I'm only like 20% of the way done with the book, but this could be a topic that very easily could be like very dry and boring, mm-hmm. but the author is writing it in a very narrative way that is very interesting to read. So just want to give that credit, because I feel like if it had been kind of boring in the beginning, I would not have continued the book. I think it was on the Goodreads. It didn't win, but it was on the list of nominees, I think, for last year for like best historical book or something. So that's what that's why I even had it on my list to begin with. But I finally decided to get it from the library. So it's pretty solid so far, especially if somebody in your life that you know enjoys history or wants to read about, you know, a true story, something that actually happened. So
can you remind me the title one more time?
Yes, it's called Madhouse at the End of the Earth.
Okay.
So, and the book cover is like blue, and then it has a ship on the front, obviously. So,
okay. Awesome. Yeah. Well, great. Any other recommendations from you?
No, that's it. I'm almost finished with Love is Blind. We talked about that before we started recording. So, next week we'll probably have a full recap on that. So,
I can't wait. Well, I have been catching up on things because the play's over. So now I'm like, I'm just watching TV. I'm reading. I'm doing everyone. If you are longtime listeners or friends of mine, you know that every year there is a mad dash to reach a goal of 100 books at the end of the year. And this year is quite possibly worse than ever before. So I counted yesterday and I had 12 books I needed to get to 100, and I finished a book yesterday. So that was, I'm at 88 today. Okay. I finished a book and I'm at 89. So I have 11 books. I have 30 days. We will see.
I think you can do that. Yeah.
I'm going to try. I'm going to do my best. I'm trying to be strategic about it. I will not cut corners, but like I've started Barack Obama's book, A Promised Land. So excited about it. It's 700 pages. I was you know what? We're going to come back to you in 2023. So there's a couple things that I have two at least that are over 450 pages that I was like, I'm going to put a pin in this. We're going to come back to you in 2023. Anyway. So, in TV news, I have been watching White Lotus season 2 and The Sex Lives of College Girls season 2. I wouldn't say I love White Lotus. I think White Lotus is a
I've heard
a
lot
fairly,
about this show, so well, and I have genius, not watched it.
It's a genius. It's kind of like Succession where you're like, I don't like anybody.
Okay.
But I can't look away because I love like how backstabbing
the
they are.
Yeah.
They're so obtuse. Like they're so wealthy or they have such bad people skills, like you just can't stop watching. And I do think, unfortunately, White Lotus is a show that you can identify those people in your real life. Like you can be like, I know this person. Yes, they're on the board at this place. And they're, that's that person's parents. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the show is genius and it's always in a beautiful location. I say this, it's only its second season, but both times it's been in like a really gorgeous location. So I think I'm not caught up though. I'm hoping tonight to probably catch up, but loving White Lotus. But I am obsessed with The Sex Lives of College Girls. Again, that's Mindy Kaling's show. another one of her shows. I think she's a straight up genius. I will watch or read anything Mindy Kaling does. But it's season two. And I just want to reiterate, last year, everybody said I was just like Kimberly, which is Pauline Chalamet's character, Lil Timmy Tim's sister. And I think that that is true. And it's becoming more true in season two. I just think there's a lot of crossover in our personalities, our hairstyles, the way we talk, the way we think. But I love the show. It's genius. It's hilarious. They've had, I think, 5 episodes out, and a new one comes out, I think, on Fridays. But both are great. Those are my shows right now. So I have reinstated HBO so I can watch them.
Okay.
Yeah. And then
and
soon
White
I'm
Lotus
gonna watch
doesn't
do what?
The cast changed, right? Like part
yes,
of the cast
the
changes.
Only okay. person that stayed was Jennifer Coolidge.
Okay. Okay.
So she was in season one, her character is in season two. So they just make it like she's just gone to another exotic location on vacation.
Okay.
and then but great question. And then I am gonna watch House of the Dragon. I have not watched it yet because is it House of Dragons? I'm embarrassed.
No, it's House of the Dragon.
Okay, cool. Correct. I said okay. Game of Thrones is one of my favorite shows of all time, but I just wanted to wait till they were all out. I couldn't control myself if it was like one episode at a time. So anyway, going to get into that soon.
Okay.
Book wise, I'll just say 2 books here. So I finally read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabriel Zevin. It was wonderful. It won Book of the Year for Goodreads this year. Out of all the books, that's what the people voted for their number one book of the year. I have been hearing about it left, right, and center. My friend Kylie and I covered it for a buddy chat on Instagram. And then our work book club that I also lead, we chose that book to cover for this month. We haven't had that chat yet, though. It was great. I think it is such a unique concept. And I am not a video gamer, like never was big into video games, still am not big into video games, but you don't have to be to enjoy this book. I think that people who love video games would find a lot of it like nostalgic and relatable. But John Green, I know, is just one of the people that said it might be one of the best books he's ever read.
Yeah,
now,
yep.
I don't want to be crazy about it. It's not like Gone with the Wind or something. Like, it's not a Pulitzer Prize winning book, but it was fascinating and engaging, and the characters are unique, and it was very thought provoking. So I loved it. It was a 5-star read for me. It's a top contender for my favorite book of the year, but I don't think it's going to be my number one. And then lastly, I read this book called The Idea of You by Robin Lee. She's also an actress that I know she was in Hitch and a couple other movies. It was so steamy. I just want to disclaimer, like, please, if you are 10 or under, don't read this. Honestly, if you're probably like 16 or under, please don't read this book. But it was so good as well. And the concept is about this mom who's about to turn 40 and she's gotten divorced and she has a young daughter and she falls in love with a guy in a boy band. And I swear to you, this character was written about Harry Styles. I kept reading it and I was like, so this is Harry Styles. I don't know for sure that this was based on Harry, but it was like reading a book about Harry Styles. And then I think that also helped me because I was like, if I was a 40-year-old divorcee, would I do this? And I was like, yes, I absolutely would. But I didn't expect it to be so steamy. Just telling you, it's like if we're putting up little fire flames for how sexy this book was, I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. Like, whoa.
Okay.
Whoa. Okay. Don't lend this book to your mom. That's all I'm saying. But it was great. And I liked the concept, and it turned out differently than I thought it would. And the book went in a totally different direction than I thought it would. So it surprised me. And I love when a book does that. Again, that was called The Idea of You by Robin Lee.
Nice. So those are all of our recommendations for this week. Lots of things to check out, TV and books. And now we'll get into our review of The Wonder. This came out on November 2nd. In a limited release, and then November 16th on Netflix, which is where it resides currently. It's rated R for some drug use, occasional strong language, sexual content, and references to child abuse. It's an hour and 48 minutes. And then IMDb, it's a 6.7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 87%, audience 73%. So audience is not liking it as much as the critics. And box office, not really any information because of the fact that it's on Netflix. So, and the synopsis for this one is a tale of two strangers who transform each other's lives, a psychological thriller, and a story of love pitted against evil. My problem with that description is that it's maybe the most generic one we've had on this show in quite a while.
Yes. And I actually think that really has almost nothing to do with what actually happens in the movie. But
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
I also would not call this a psychological thriller.
No.
all.
At all.
No.
This is not a psychological thriller.
Jared, is it okay for me to make my correction now?
Yes, go
for
it.
Might as well. You guys, Jared is so good. This is why we are besties. He caught this. He's absolutely right. Sorry, going back to my Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow book. It's not the Goodreads winner. My apologies. It's Book of the Month that won Book of the Year. So the Book of the Month people, of which I'm also part, voted it Best Book of the Year. It is, however, a finalist in the Goodreads one. So that I also saw it there because I voted in those the Goodreads Choice Awards. But anyway, just wanted to make that correction. But either way, if you're a Book of the Month person or hear me talk about it all the time, please sponsor us. It's the number one book of the year for those readers.
It also could be the Goodreads fiction book of the year.
But I don't want to lie.
Voting's still open for a few more days.
Yes,
so.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Back to The Wonder, which is not a psychological thriller.
No. Also, 4.3 million votes cast in the Goodreads Choice Awards so far.
That's
wild. That's a lot of people voting
I
on books.
Love Goodreads. I know like some people are obsessed with Letterboxd, but I get much more excited about Goodreads. But I do like Letterboxd. I'm trying to get better. And I think for 2023, I might leave reviews for the movies.
Oh,
like
wow.
Right now, I just give them a little star rating and then log when I watch it.
Yep.
So I might do reviews next year.
Okay. That step up for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
This movie, The Wonder, is directed by Sebastian Lelo.
I think
Lelo?
So.
Lelo? Okay.
I don't know.
Born
Lelo,
in
Lelo.
Chile. He has 17 directing credits, including A Fantastic Woman, Gloria, Disobedience, and The Sacred Family. No upcoming projects listed yet. I will say Netflix, when they promoted this movie, acted like I was supposed to know like who he was. Like he was a famed director. They put him in like all the marketing and they're like a movie by Sebastian Lelo. And I'm like, I don't know who that is.
I know. And so I actually thought, I wondered about that too. Wondered about it because I kept thinking that there was something miraculous about him too. And when I was looking on IMDb and trying to get some background on him for the notes, I didn't find anything.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of like, is there some movie he directed that I missed, but doesn't seem like
it. I feel like he did, but it didn't pop up on IMDb. So that's why I'm kind of still at a loss.
If you're a big Sebastian fan, let us know. And
yeah, we're sorry, Sebastian. I'm sure you're a great person, but yeah. And everybody keeps talking about, like even when I search his name, they're talking about how everyone is praising this film. And I just don't think I saw the same film. I don't know.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about that when we come back here on the show. When we come back, we'll talk about the cast and then also our likes and dislikes for The Wonder. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about The Wonder. This movie stars in the lead role Florence Pugh playing the role of Lib Wright.
Yes, Florence Pugh. I will say I really debated a crush alert here, but ultimately I chose not to because I think right now I'm jealous of her more than a fan. Yeah. And I'm still a little prickly about that, the Don't Worry Darling stuff. So anyway, moving on. Florence Pugh, she's stunning. She's hilarious. She's brilliant. She's a great actress. She plays Lib Wright in this movie. She's an English actress best known for playing Amy March in Greta Gerwig's Little Women, Midsommar, Don't Worry Darling, and Black Widow. In 2020, she was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for Little Women. She has 7 upcoming projects already. I just listed some. I actually listed the ones I'm most interested about in. The Maid, also based on a book. Dune Part 2, Oppenheimer, and A Good Person. So you'll see her again. Don't worry, everyone.
A lot of stuff coming up.
Yes. And then the other two, I don't have a lot to say about them, but I did want to mention them because they do play important roles. Tom Burke plays Will Byrne. He is an English actor, but you might recognize him from his role in Mank, which we did review last year. He played Orson Welles. He was also in the BBC series The Musketeers, and he played the role of Dolokhov in the 2016 BBC series adaptation of War and Peace. So he's really good at those period dramas. And then next up, he will be in Furiosa, which sounded familiar to me, and I was correct. It has to do with the Mad Max role, those characters coming back, so he'll be in that. And then lastly, we have Kyla Lord Cassidy. She plays Anna O'Donnell, so she's the young girl in this movie. She is known for The Doorman, Viewpoint, and the short Our Tallulah. She doesn't have any upcoming projects listed yet, but I thought this was a fun fact. The woman who plays her mother in this film, the actress is Elaine Cassidy. That's her mother in real life. And I was like, what a fun.
That's kind of cool.
Because they looked a lot alike. And then when I saw that, I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. But it's cool that they're both actresses as well. Oh, and then also I did want to mention there's not a ton of familiar faces for me in this movie, but Toby Jones is in this movie as well. And a lot of people love him. He's very recognizable and a great actor. So I did want to mention he's in the cast. But other than that, there weren't a lot of people that I was like, oh, yeah, I know him or her.
Yeah, and Toby Jones is not in the movie for a super long time. I wanted to bring him up, though, because I saw a couple weeks ago during the Heartland Film Festival that new movie, Empire of Light, that he's in with Olivia Colman and Colin Firth. He's in that. That was okay. It's not great, just so you know. So, I mean, I wouldn't go to the theater to see it,
but
if you want to check it out on the streaming, maybe. Right now, it's sitting at 44% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, that's not good for that.
Oh.
I thought it was better than that, but apparently people not loving it. So, it's also about an interracial relationship, so like there could be some, people just hating on it for that reason. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for mentioning this, though, Jared. I forgot to put that in the notes, but we did want to say there is a trigger warning in this episode, especially when we're talking about the subject matter of child abuse and some sexual abuse. So we definitely want to, if that is something you're not comfortable with, especially in regards to children, this might not be the movie for you, and you might not want to hear the rest of the episode.
So some likes for this movie, starting with Florence Pugh. Her acting's really solid in this one once again.
Yeah.
Way less drama on the set of this, apparently, than Don't Worry, Darling. But she's definitely carrying this movie just like she was that one earlier this year.
Yes, I agree. I definitely wanted to give Florence a call out, but I'm almost tired of it. Like she's good in everything. Like, we get it. But also, when you mentioned she's carrying this movie, Jared, she is. She's carrying the beginning, middle, and end in an enormous knapsack on her back through the whole slog.
In like, her bonnet.
They're in her bonnet. There is nobody else in this film that even sort of rivaled her. And there was nobody else in this film, unfortunately, that I thought rivaled or like even wowed me with their performance. They're not bad at all. I just don't think this is a movie that highlights a lot of acting. And I think I mentioned this. It's not a psychological thriller. I just really want to keep. I say that because I love psychological thrillers.
Me too. Yeah.
That's the kind of scary film I will go see. And this is not that. So I'm kind of infuriated that they're marketing it as such.
Yeah. Another like is that it's not super long. It's an hour and 45 minutes. So that's not really that bad at all. Hour and 48, I guess, if you want to be exact. So it's nice to see a movie under 2 hours. I think that fit the story. I don't think this story was overly complicated, so I didn't think the movie needed to be super long. So I'm glad that it wasn't. But that is nice that it was a little bit on the shorter side.
Yes, I do agree with that. And I also, in addition to it not being very long, I did think this was an excellent Netflix choice. Like, I do think if Netflix is going to spend the money to make a film that's mostly going to be highlighted on a streaming service, like, this is the perfect kind of film to do for that. Because I don't know, like, it was fine. I did stop it a couple times. I paused it to, like, go to the bathroom or get a snack or coffee to keep me awake. But I did think this was a good choice. I think Netflix is getting better and better about knowing what content they should put on the platform as well. So kudos to them for that choice.
Yeah, this was one that took me, this was 2 sittings to get through, which is not good when it's only an hour and 45 minutes. But I watched like the first hour and was like, okay, I took a break. And then the next day watched the final 45 minutes. So it does explain how being overtly religious or a zealot can have negative impacts. Basically, the real synopsis of this movie is that there is this girl and she is not eating, and Florence Pugh is brought in to try and understand why that is and why that is happening, and basically go to this board with the info that she's gathered to try and figure out why this girl is not eating. But this is all under the basis basically of like this religious kind of cult thing that's going on as well, which she kind of steps into when she comes into that situation.
Yes. And I had this listed a little later in a dislike, but if people are wondering, because a lot of people did ask if this was based on something, it is. There were fasting girls in Ireland. And there was, at the same time, there was like where it was like a religious thing to fast. But also the Great Famine in Ireland happened from 1845 to 1852. And this book was kind of an amalgamation of all of those things. But to me, I think that what they did well with this film was they do explain how being overtly religious or or sticking so much to a religion, or saying somebody I never met, like Jesus, somebody that was real but I never met said this, so we have to do this, with no actual basis on like a one-on-one conversation thing, how that can be so dangerous. Because especially like this girl, she keeps saying like, I'm eating the manna. So she's eating like food from heaven. But you can't, I mean, we are also humans, which was also a choice by a divine creator. So like we have to have food and water to live. So this whole thing is crazy, basically. But it does, I do think the movie did a good job of showing how dangerous that can be when you adhere to any kind of religion or any kind of methodology. So specifically how it can be dangerous.
Also, this movie was pretty simple. It doesn't take place in a lot of different locations. Most of it is all in this like one house for the most part. And in the countryside. So there's not a lot of costumes either. It's a pretty low-key movie. That's probably how I would describe it. It's not overly flashy at all, for sure.
Yes, and I liked that. I mean, I do. Sometimes I really like the simplicity. Actually, simplicity a lot of times reminds me of plays where either they're in one location or something where there's just not a lot of costume changes. There's not a lot of like set changes or location changes. You don't need a lot of characters. I did really like that about this. That actually might be my favorite part of this was the simplicity. It was beautiful in its simplicity. And there was still... It wasn't a story I loved, but it was still a very full, well-rounded story that you see happen in this like hour and 49 minutes or whatever. And they did that well. So that definitely is like the highest compliment I can give the film.
And another like is that, it looks nice as well. It's a depressing movie, but it does, the scenery does look nice.
Yeah. And I mentioned that too, because I did have that thought for myself. But when I did Google a little bit, people were talking about cinematography and like how pretty everything was and how well it was like shot. So I'm wondering if it would get nominated for something to do with that. But it is very gloomy. It's like if you're a big fan of like the moors in, why can't I think of Heathcliff and Kathy? Why can't I think of it? Wuthering Heights. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Wuthering Heights, if you like that kind of thing, or you like really like kind of dreary and depressing European backdrops, this is the movie for you. Or if you really like movies about religious oppression, go for it.
So we'll move into our dislikes now. I think the biggest dislike for this is that this is just not a very memorable movie. Like I've watched it. I'm not going to think about it like down the road. Like you mentioned Mank earlier when you were doing the cast, and that's like the same thought. Like that was a movie that I watched, and then like basically until you said that title, I've totally
never
erased it from
it
my
again.
Memory. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's going to be the same thing with this movie, I think.
oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's probably going to leave my brain in like a week or two, and I'm going to forget that I even watched it. So
I mean, for me, I thought of that note because even 5 minutes after I watched it, I just like moved on with my life. And it was late at night, but I immediately was like, okay, I guess it's time for me to read. Thank God. Like I just moved on very quickly from it and didn't give it a second thought. And for me personally, as someone who loves movies, that's a bad sign. I want a movie that makes me like, I actually have to contemplate some stuff. And maybe I wake up the next day and start thinking about it again. Or I see friends for some drinks and I bring up movies. This is one that I will not talk about, I will not bring up, and I didn't think about past the end credits.
Yeah, I think another dislike for me in this, and this is a spoiler too a little bit, so if you haven't seen this movie, maybe if you want to watch it, come back and then listen to the rest of this. But I think for me, I just didn't really ever know where the movie was going or what it wanted me to kind of feel.
Right.
Because we've got this situation where Florence is trying to help this girl out, but then also Florence is like doing these weird drop things. And then she's also in a relationship too, sort of, or like a hookup situation. So
there's
a lot going on. And I think the movie was just going in a bunch of different directions. Now, obviously it's probably trying to go off of the book. So the book is probably doing that as well. But I just never understood as a viewer, like what it wanted me to focus on or what it, I was like, do I need to care about Florence? Do I care about the girl? Do I care about the town as a whole? Like, I didn't really know what I was supposed to, you know, be worrying about in this one.
Jared, you just brought up like some of the things that made me so irritated with this film because, and these are spoilers, so if you don't want to hear them, she definitely is doing drugs of some sort. So I didn't look it up. I forgot to look it up. I kind of think it was like an opiate.
Okay.
And I think she's doing it But I'm not sure, so I could be wrong. So don't take me take that with a grain of salt. She's definitely doing a drug. And I think it's because she's trying to grieve the loss of her child. So you do learn throughout the book and the film that she had a baby and it only lived a couple weeks, and then her husband left her. And which he's garbage as well. Maybe he should be on Love is Blind. Anyway, she's like every night she like pricks her finger so it's bleeding, which some of that I think is self-harm. Like she's like trying to you know just feel pain so she feels mm-hmm. something. And then she holds like the little booties, like the little foot booties that her baby had, and part of me feels devastated for her because I do care. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I know people who have lost children. This is a real thing that you hold these things that you know used to wore or whatever. That I grieve for, that I care about that. But the drug part, I was like, I don't understand. And also, she's a nurse, which makes even less sense. Like, why would she be doing drugs? Or why would she still be a nurse? Like, you take an oath, the same as a doctor. So kind of pick one. Either be a nurse and help people or self-harm and do drugs. I don't know. And then the other thing was her relationship with the other guy, the journalist, came out of nowhere. I did forget about that from the book. But also, like, they very clearly, like, fornicate. In a scene that I thought, we didn't even need that. And it wasn't even that hot. Like, it wasn't something where I was like, ooh, yeah, like 50 Shades, I paid for this. It was bizarre and unnecessary, and it didn't move the plot. It was strange. And to me, it also didn't fit the time. I know people at that time did have sex, but I also think this movie is so much about, like, religion and rules and, you know, oppression, that I'm like, this doesn't even really fit the tone of the film. This is purely Hollywood being like, we have to have some sex in here. So that was gross.
You're right.
To
and
me.
It was,
I hated
it.
It
was a weird sex scene too, because they were both fully clothed, and it was odd. So
yeah. And then I guess my next bone to pick is, what is wrong with the parents in this family? Like and really anyone who is policing this situation. There were so many people involved. There were clergymen. It seemed like there was, like, I don't know if he was a mayor, but like there's political people involved. There's religious people involved, and her parents are involved, and no one does anything. They're just like, yeah, like God's feeding her and she's all good. And I just think, I'm not even a parent and I would never, ever tolerate this. And kudos to I think that's what makes the character of Lib, Florence's character, interesting, is that she stays relatively calm. And just secretly judges these people and tries to assess the situation, which is what a good nurse, I think, would do. But me, just as a passionate person, I'm like, this is nuts and I would never tolerate this. And I would either like start screaming and like trying to see what's going on here, or I would leave. So anyway, that infuriated me. And it was just like, and also when you find out why this girl is so traumatized and not eating, you also wonder what is wrong with the parents in this situation.
Maybe that's why it's called The Wonder, because you as the viewer just have so many questions.
Because you're wondering, yeah.
You're wondering what's going on. Yeah. Another dislike is, this is not really like a original concept. It's based, like you said, in Ireland and the Great Famine that was going on in the 1800s. So there's not really a lot of original stuff happening in this movie that makes you think, oh, this is a really cool setting, or I haven't seen this before. We don't get many movies made about, you know. Yeah. It looked like your standard, you know, period piece that was just kind of basic. So,
well, and I won't dock the film for that. But I do really dislike when people market films, or critics, or just people who are reviewing films are like, what an original concept, when they have no idea what they're talking about. And I've seen that with this movie. They're like, this is such an original film. And I'm like, it's not. It's based on a book, which already makes it unoriginal. And also, it's based on a historical event, which makes it unoriginal. Like, that is so strange. Like, a lot of sci-fi and stuff is actually original. Somebody had an idea about something that really doesn't happen. Or fantasy. Like, a lot of that actually, those are original ideas. It really bothers me when people say, like, this was really, like, wow, what an idea. And it's based on both history and a book. So, I'm not docking the movie for that, but I do want people to know this was not an original idea.
Yeah, we're going to review like the menu next week, and I've mm-hmm. seen it already, but you have not. But I think one thing I would say about that is it's one of the more original movies I have seen in quite a while. So when somebody says something's original, I think of something like that, or I think of something like, I don't know, like The Truman Show or something that you're like, wow, I've just never seen that done before, you know, on screen. So I don't think this movie is insanely original. So,
or I even think of something like, we haven't seen Babylon. It's not out yet. But I could already tell you that although there's going to be people based in history in the film, like depicted in the film, there's also going to be created characters. That's original. Like, that's an interesting idea to take both historical and, but to just take something that happened and do a movie about it, that's not original. So I don't think the movie was bad because of that, but I want people to know, like, if you see a movie and like consider that and consider what is the history and what's factual mm-hmm. about this, and was this based on something real? And it was.
Or like Midnight in Paris, which we did a few weeks ago, which I think is, you know, such a cool concept for a movie, because it's taking these real life historical people, but it's saying this guy's going to basically have the ability to time travel back to this period. And, you know, time travel is not original, but the way they set that up in that movie, him talking to all these historical figures and going back and forth and all that stuff, I mean, that really does make it kind of a original film. So. Mm-hmm. And obviously not based on a book or anything. So, another dislike. The ending was just very weird in this movie. I didn't read the book. I didn't understand the ending. Also, we didn't mention this, but like, this movie's very slow. And then like everything happens in the last like 20 minutes. It's like, yes. Boom, 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 everything. Boom, boom. Here we go. So you're like, you as a viewer are like just sitting there the whole time. Like, okay, I guess I can just like sort of pay attention to this.
Falling asleep.
Yeah. And then the end comes and you're like, whoa, they just threw like all this stuff at me all at once.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going on. And then the movie's just like, oh, it's done. So basically the end of the movie is like, they go Florence and the guy, the journalist and the daughter, they mm-hmm. go and like start a new life and go by a new name. Yeah. And there's no explanation.
Fire.
Yeah. There's a fire. She sets the house on fire.
Yeah.
Don't know why she did that.
I do know that she was trying to hide evidence because she's trying to convince the family. This is all spoilers.
That she died, right? Yeah.
Yeah. She's trying to convince the family that the girl died. So she's just like getting rid of evidence and stuff, which is interesting. And then she burns her hands. That's interesting. All of that's interesting. But yeah, I was like, this is. But the one thing you haven't mentioned is the thing that made me the most upset. So I don't want to interrupt your thought.
No, that was, I mean, this last dislike is pretty big. So the beginning of the movie starts and you see this house that is in like this soundstage somewhere in Hollywood. I don't know.
In a hangar, like in a hangar.
Airplane hangar almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And there's a lot of equipment around, and then there's like some fourth wall breaking where they're talking to you directly as the viewer, and you're like, they're like, this is this and this is what this is. Then the rest of the movie is completely set in this time period, and then the very end of the movie they go back to that scene of the house, and that's how the movie ends. It just very much takes you out of it.
It easily was my least favorite thing of the film. They broke the fourth wall at the beginning and the end. It made me uninterested at the beginning and it made me angry at the end. I know some people really like that. I think that sometimes breaking the fourth wall is really cool concept-wise. It made no sense for this film, in my opinion. I absolutely hated it. You know, what I think is, because Florence, I've heard her talk about this movie, and I do think she's very intelligent, and I do think we would like each other, despite my jealousy. But she, I wonder if this is a film, because sometimes this has happened to me with plays. When you're in a play, you really like obsessively talk about it. You think about the character. You think about the motivations. You get really invested because you're in that production. But sometimes that doesn't come across to the audience. And I wonder if that's what happened here, where she understands the character. She gets the motivation. She gets why they broke the fourth wall. So when she's promoting this film, she's like, this is brilliant. And then all these other, you know, people who we've talked about that are kind of pretentious critics are like, oh my gosh, this film is just, it's magnificent. But I think that this could be that case where maybe there were some brilliant choices made, or maybe they get something we're not seeing. But I also think as good directors and actors, it's your responsibility to convey that to the audience that's watching, and they didn't. So I just thought this was kind of a flop, in my opinion. But breaking the fourth wall was the strangest choice to me, and it just really, really upset me.
Yeah, that was very odd in terms of that's how the movie starts and also ends. So, and I hadn't looked at critics' reviews at all before, you know, we started recording. I'm just scrolling through some of them now as we're talking here. But you're right. So many of them are saying this is a very original film and this is fresh and it's brilliant and I've never seen this before. And I don't understand that at all, really. So I didn't see the same movie, but I thought this was very middle of the road.
Yeah. And I am not at all against period dramas or anything. And I won't count any points against the film for this either. But I do think Florence Pugh, even being in a period piece at this time period, like saying that's original, I'm like, no, we've seen her do that with a couple other films. Like, this isn't even, she's not even playing a new type of person. So I just thought it was very weird. I don't know. Maybe I don't understand, but it just felt very flat for me. It's definitely not the worst film of the year, but it is not something I will talk about, think about, recommend at all.
No. Same here. So time to go on to our scores now for The Wonder. I'm going to give this one just a straight 60, I think.
Okay.
Come in right there at 60. So I did not really enjoy it. I'm not going to get, it's definitely better than like a 20s or like, I did not actively hate watching this like I did Blonde.
Yeah.
You know, so it's got that going for it, but I don't think this movie's really doing anything that knocks your socks off. Florence is good. It's always, you know, good to see her in a movie, and she's definitely carrying this one, as we mentioned, but I don't think this is one that I will rewatch or come back to, or I probably won't even remember it. You know, I'll go through my Letterboxd movies I've seen at the end of the year and be like, and I'll have seen this 3 weeks before I do that, and I'll be like, oh yeah, The Wonder, I forgot I even watched that.
Right.
So
yeah, I feel exactly that way. I'm giving it a 69 because I always tend to be just nice with scores, but I just wasn't wowed by this. Florence is great. Again, she's carrying this movie on her back in the snow uphill. She's doing the work. She's doing the most in this film, but it just didn't do anything for me. It's not memorable. I honestly get really triggered by like religious stuff that's like negative. So I don't like that. I think the parents are stupid. And the subject matter, we didn't get really into a lot of the subject matter, but a lot of where this child, her pain stemmed from and not eating was because of sexual assault that happened to her. And also that stuff, I know that happens. I think it's important to discuss those things, but that's really hard to watch, especially when kids are involved. And I hate that, especially when kids are involved and there was no punishment for the child that committed the sin. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Anyway, just not a great film for me. 69. Great job. Okay.
No.
Moving on.
Not super loving it. So you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram, and search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook, and be sure to like us there. Rate and review wherever you listen. That really helps us out. We've got our Letterboxd profiles in the description in the show notes. So you can check us out there if you want to follow us on Letterboxd. And then next week on the show, we're going to review the new movie, The Menu, starring Anya Taylor-Joy and Ralph Fiennes. This is directed by Mark Millad, who also works on Succession and has done things like Shameless and Game of Thrones as well. So if you like Succession, I think you will enjoy this movie. I've already seen it. I know I really liked it. I'm excited for you to see it, Katie. This mm-hmm. movie, I would say, is a psychological thriller, unlike The Wonder. So
yeah.
There's definitely more of a thriller vibe with The Menu than I got from The Wonder. So
I can't wait. I'm really excited about it.
So that'll be our next episode, reviewing The Menu.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.